Welcome, listeners, to Bruin Radio Interviews, an hour-long interview show brought to you by the students and staff of the Brookings Harbor High School in partnership with Curry Coast Community Radio, KCIW. Content for this program is provided by the Brookings Harbor High School.
Hello, my name is Isabella Freitas and
Ashley Ellis,
and we are Bruin News. Today we are here with City Manager Gary Milliman. Hello, welcome. We want to congratulate you on your retirement.
Well, thank you very much.
The first thing we wanted to discuss was the city website shares that recent and upcoming staff changes prompted your decision to retire. Could you talk to us about what else led up to your decision to retire in 2018?
Well, I'm completing 45 years in city government in 2018, and we'll be completing 11 years with the city of Brookings. And there are a number of factors that lead to it. One is the staffing changes that we're experiencing at City Hall. It's an appropriate time for a city manager who is nearing retirement to step out and allow a new city manager to come in and pick a lot of their own team. The city manager appoints all of the employees, including the department heads. So a new manager would be appointing a public works director and a police chief and some other key people. So rather than me make those appointments at the end of my time here or near the end of the time, it seems appropriate to have someone who's going to be here for some years to come, hopefully, make those selections. Things are changing in government over the years. There are new regulations that have come into place and and government's becoming more complex. So it's a situation where I've gone through a number of those changes over the years, and it's just time to leave it to someone who has new energy.
Can you tell us about the upcoming vote on the 4-cent gas tax?
Sure. The voters of Brookings approved a 4-cent gas tax 3 years ago. And they included in that tax a sunset clause, which means that it automatically expires unless it's approved again by the voters. So it's on the ballot next month in May to reauthorize the 4 cents for another 5 years. The 4-cent gas tax collects about $290,000 a year from people who buy gasoline within the city of Brookings. And those funds are used to do street repairs and repaving. And you may have seen some of that around the school area here in the last several weeks. So that would be continuing for another 5 years. And we've got a 5-year plan for additional street improvements. I noticed today that the gas prices in town are about 10 cents a gallon less than the gas stations in Harbor, even with the tax. So the impact of the tax is really nominal on the average driver. And much of the tax is paid by people who don't live in Brookings or Harbor. They're tourists passing through. So they pay the tax along with residents.
Well, what happens if the voters end up voting no on the gas tax? What are the results from that?
Well, we would have to scale back our street improvement program. Before the 4-cent tax, there was a $2.98 per month fee levied on city water and sewer customers that generated about $135,000 a year. So that was dropped in a part of the 4-cent tax that was eliminated. It can't be reenacted unless the gas tax fails. Then the council would have the option of taking a look at that again. But, of course, that produced less money.
Will people gassing up in Harbor stations be affected by this law?
They will not be affected by this regulation. The gas tax does not apply to the gas stations in Harbor, only within the city limits. People who live in Harbor attend school in Brookings, go to work in Brookings, go to Fred Meyer. So they use our city streets as well. So it seems reasonable that they would contribute to the street repairs in town. But we don't have the authority to levy a gas tax in Harbor.
You said that Brookings doesn't have the authority to levy taxes in Harbor, but who does?
Curry County. It would take a vote of the Curry County residents to levy a tax in Harbor. Harbor is not a city. They don't have a city council. It's not a local government like the city of Brookings. So they're part of the unincorporated area of Curry County. So all of the people in Curry County would have to enact a tax in the unincorporated area.
Will the entire county get to vote on the measure, or only those within the Brookings urban growth boundary?
Only people who live in the city of Brookings will be voting on the gas tax.
So according to the results of the May 2015 vote on Measure 880, which was the first gas tax, there were 1,096 votes in favor and 615 votes against. Do you believe that recent road improvements will lead to a higher ratio of favorable votes?
Well, we hope so. We hope that people who voted the first time and will be voting again this time will see that we've actually done the work that we promised to do. And we'll develop some confidence in that we'll continue to carry on with similar improvements over the next 5 years. So we're hoping for a good turnout and a good result in the election.
Who is we when you say we hope?
Okay. I would say the city council and the staff of the city who are responsible for street maintenance.
In your city email address, your signature line reads MPA/USC and CCM/ICMA. What do these stand for?
Okay. I have a Master of Public Administration degree from the University of Southern California. So that's what the first acronyms stand for. And then I'm a credentialed city manager with the International City County Management Association. So that's the second acronym. ICMA, the City Management Association, is a 9,000 member worldwide organization of city managers. And I've been a member for about 45 years. And they have a professional certification program. It's a combination of ongoing education and experience. Where that you have certain educational requirements every year and experience requirements in order to maintain your certification as a credentialed manager. So I graduated from USC from the MPA program back in 1976. And that's the basis of my public administration education.
The election of a Curry County Commissioner to position number one on the commission is coming up in May. Without going into specifics on your personal opinion, what do city managers look for in a county government leadership?
Well, the county government leadership has changed somewhat in the last few months. Historically, in Curry County, the county government management has consisted of three elected county commissioners, each of whom manages a group of city or county departments. So Commissioner Boyce, for example, who's one of the current commissioners, would be assigned to managing, say, the Public Works Department and other departments of the city, while Commissioner Huxley, who's one of the current commissioners, he would be the liaison or the commissioner who's managing IT and some of the other those other functions of the county. So in Brookings, our elected officials, our city council members, are all volunteer. So they don't manage individual departments. They provide policy guidance to the city manager. And my job is to manage all of the department operations of the city. So it's not a divided management or divided method. So my hope is that the county commissioners, whoever's elected and stays in office, will continue to move down the path of establishing a county administrator in a similar form of government that the city has. I found it difficult over the years. I've been with the city for a little over 10 years. Found it difficult over the years to work in good partnership with the county because of the diffused nature of the management, not really knowing who is managing what parts, and dealing with a situation where they can't make a management decision unless they have a meeting of all three of them and take a vote. Where in the city, the council has delegated a lot of the management authority to the city manager, so we can act, I think, more efficiently and more quickly and resolve issues. So I'm hopeful that the county will, that the new commissioner will be on board with this change to a county administrator, and we can improve our relationships and working relationships with the county.
So can you talk to us about the current status of the airport just north of Brookings?
Sure. The Brookings Airport, located in the city, but just north of the main part of the city, is currently owned by Curry County. It's been owned by the county for about 20 years. They received it as a gift from the state of Oregon. And the airport hasn't seen much activity over that period of time. There have been few improvements there. So the city has offered to purchase the airport from the county. And our goal in purchasing the airport would be to provide, we think, better management of the airport, to track down funding through state and federal grant programs to make improvements to the airport. There's an airport master plan that calls for the addition of up to 35 more hangars for additional aircraft at the airport. And we think we can enter into some partnerships with private companies to be able to do that. We'd like to develop an area next to the airport into an industrial park to create jobs. So we're enthusiastic about the prospect of acquiring the airport from the county. The county's operation is based in Gold Beach. They don't have any resources really in Brookings to do maintenance there. All of their management people are in Gold Beach. And it's kind of a forgotten part of the county operation. And that will not be the case if the city owns it. So we're waiting for approval from the Federal Aviation Administration on our purchase and sale agreement before we can move forward.
Mr. Milliman, how confident are you that the FAA is going to approve this agreement?
Very confident. The city has been working with the Oregon Department of Aviation on this same agreement, and they've approved it. The FAA has had the agreement for some time. We've made some changes at their request, and so I'm very confident that ultimately it will be approved. It's really a matter of priorities at the FAA, and the FAA being the Federal Aviation Administration. So they deal with all types and sizes of airports and other issues like airplane crashes and such. So approving a sales agreement between the little city of Brookings and the little city of Curry County is not on the top of their list. But I'm sure it'll get done.
As a city manager, what is your experience with airports?
Absolutely none. but that doesn't mean it's a mystery. I've managed railroads in the past and all manner of other facilities and projects, and it's just a matter of learning the regulations and the procedures. And for those things that you're not familiar with, you find someone who is, and you retain their services to help you. So that's how we approach a number of our activities.
We learned from the city website that you are a member of the Pelican Bay State Prison Citizens Advisory Committee. Tell us about this committee.
Sure. It's a committee comprised of citizens primarily from Delaware County that meets with the warden at the prison at Pelican Bay and other prison managers to provide feedback from the community about the prison and exchange information about the prison, what's happening at the prison. And primarily, my interest in serving on the committee has been to create an exchange with the prison management to see how Brookings businesses can access the ability to provide services to the prison. That means how can we make sure that the prison, when it's purchasing materials and food and all of the supplies that it needs and contracts for services, remembers that Brookings is a part of the greater community here and that many of the employees of the prison live in Brookings. About a third of the employees that work at the prison live in Brookings. So there are issues like maintaining safe roads between Brookings and the prison for employees and as well as marketing services. Now, the prison brings inmates to Brookings for some medical services. And we had an incident a few years ago where one of the inmates escaped in town. And really my involvement with the advisory committee grew out of that experience where we didn't know that they were bringing inmates to Brookings for medical services. So we didn't know the inmate was here. We didn't know that the prison, the corrections officers didn't have any radio communications with us at the time. The first that we knew that we had an escaped prisoner in town was when the prisoner ran down Fifth Street and was trying to break in cars at Ray's Market with armed corrections officers chasing after him. So we've fixed that problem, and that's part of the reason for this committee is to improve relationships between the prison and the community.
What is an important issue you recently voted on as a part of that committee?
We don't vote. Provide comments to the prison management and hear about what's happening at the prison. I guess the greatest impact of my participation to date has been to encourage them to include Brookings in their recruitment for corrections officers and make sure that they get the word out in Brookings as well as Crescent City that they are recruiting for corrections officers and other jobs at the prison and consider Brookings and Oregon residents and also providing information to the prison and the prison staff that they can provide to new employees at the prison about Brookings so that they can consider Brookings as a place to live while they're working at the prison. You know, many of the employees at the prison make really good salaries. If we can bring the benefits of those incomes to Brookings where they buy their house and their food and things in Brookings, that's an economic benefit to the community. So we want to make sure that every new employee has a packet of information about Brookings, Brookings housing, and why it's a great place to live here and better than Crescent City.
In our last interview, you told us about trips you and other city managers took to China to discuss the management of municipalities. Could you tell us about the experience?
Sure. China is going through a major change in the way that it is governed at the local level. In my first trip to China back in 2005, everything was very much centralized. And if you met with government officials, they were basically afraid to talk to you. And if you'd had a conversation about, well, who makes decisions, the typical response was the people. The people make every decision. Well, who decides where the train is going to be built? The people. So, and they were afraid to say anything different. Very, very communist, hard line. The last trip that I took, 10 years later, so different. The federal government has decided to move a lot of decision-making down to the local government level. So the municipalities now are making decisions on land use, where buildings go, what neighborhoods are going to be redeveloped, where streets are located, how big they're going to be, the types of businesses that they're trying to attract, just a number of things. In charge of utilities and kind of like the cities in the United States. But one of the things that they, one of many things that they haven't overcome yet, is that there's still a old political structure there where, for example, the minimum size of a city council in China, regardless of the size of the city, is 150. Here it's 5. 150 council members, if you can imagine that, in Brookings. And the city, the equivalent of an administrative officer is whoever the senior member of the Communist Party is in that community. They don't have to have any management training or knowledge about government or anything. They're the senior member of the party. Well, that's changing. They're now developing a professional management structure. They're experimenting with smaller councils, like 60. They're not quite there yet. And pushing a lot of the decision-making out of the national government down to the local government. So we've been working with local officials in China to learn about things like ethics and how to hold a public hearing. And pretty common in the U.S. for city councils to have a public hearing. People want to object to something, or somebody wants to build a housing project and have a public hearing, hear what the people have to say. And that's a new, totally alien idea in China. So they're struggling with how to transition from this very controlled society to a more open society. My last trip there, one of the big issues on TV was a proposal to develop a garbage dump, right? And people who lived in the area where the dump was proposed showed up at a public meeting. And it was sort of like the big national news, never happened before. People show up and protest something and weren't shocked. The International City Management Association that I'm a member of are trying to help the municipalities in China get through this process of change.
On a simpler note, what was the food like?
Well, you can get McDonald's or whatever you like in most places in China, or Pizza Hut or what have you. But I enjoyed the Chinese food quite a different, right? It's not like the Chinese food anywhere in town here. First time I've ever had pigeon, for example. A lot of tofu, a lot of vegetables. The meats are prepared in sort of a different style, mostly baked. It was. The U.S. is one of the, insects are not a part of our diet, but that's not the case in China. That's pretty common. So you had a few different things on your plate that you had to get used to or not.
From the times that you visited, have you picked up any Chinese at all?
No, I can say thank you and hello, and that's about it. I took Spanish in high school and German in college and immersed myself in a Spanish-speaking program for 3 weeks, and I retained none of it. So I have a language block. And I'm really impressed because usually when we take the trip to China, we are assigned a guide from the Chinese School of Law and Public Administration, and they're typically women, budding lawyers. A lot of them like to be lawyers, and they speak perfect English and instantly translate. So they're all much smarter than me. But we had no trouble getting around. We had an adventure, if I could digress. We had kind of an adventure. My wife's luggage was destroyed in the trip on the Chinese airline, and mine was damaged. So we had to purchase new suitcases. So we were staying at a small hotel, and had to go downtown to the 7-story department store to purchase new suitcases. So the concierge gave written instructions to the cab driver on where to take us, and then on the flip side wrote how to get back, and our instructions were to give that to the cab driver when we came back. So we got to the department store, and no one spoke English at the department store. No one. So we had to go up and down the escalator looking for the luggage section. Finally found the luggage section, hooked up with a really nice clerk who had good success on her understanding what we were looking for. So I think she showed us every suitcase in the whole department, opened them up on all of the zippers and everything. We selected the two we wanted. She was very helpful. Then we offered to pay with a credit card. And they only had one station in the 7-story building that took American credit cards in the jewelry department. So we had to go down to the first floor and do the transaction and that, and then took our cab back. So it was a kind of an adventure traveling into a downtown area, which was totally different than us, and actually making a transaction with folks that had no communication other than pointing. It was fun.
What's your bank like? What are you doing in China?
Yeah, that part worked fine.
Okay.
The suitcases were cheap.
Okay. Was pollution a problem in the Chinese city that you were in?
In one of them, in Shanghai, we experienced pollution there. You know, Shanghai is a city of 23 million population, and they have a lot of 18-story apartment buildings. And you within a fairly short distance, could lose sight of the building down the street because of the haze. And there were a lot of people wearing masks. It didn't particularly bother me, but I wasn't doing a lot of walking also. So, but you could tell that it was an issue there in Shanghai. The other cities, I didn't particularly notice anything. What I did notice is that they were doing a lot of reforestation and a lot of, in a big way, dealing with carbon restoration. So they were planting lots of trees.
The city website is advertising an Elmo Williams Day. Could you tell us a little bit about this event?
Sure. Elmo Williams was a resident of Brookings. He passed away 2 years ago at the age of 102. And he was a Hollywood producer, director, film editor, won the Academy Award for film editing. And when he retired, moved to Brookings, bought a house here on the ocean, he and his wife, and became very involved in the community. He was involved in the Azalea Park Foundation, which created the botanical gardens at Azalea Park. He was involved in a community theater. He wrote a play, acted in several of the Pelican, Checo Pelican players' plays. Did some fundraising for them. He would show some of the movies that he had made and narrate some of the aspects of how they were made and how he was able to get the actors to participate. Really interesting, very articulate guy. So he also funded the construction of a building at the park known as the Capella by the Sea. So it was about an $800,000 chapel that he paid for at the park, and is used now for weddings and funerals and other purposes. So a group of citizens has organized something called Elmo Williams Day. It's held every year. This is the second year on his birthday. And they show a movie at the Capella and talk about the Capella. And then they, I think this year they're hosting a movie at the Redwood Theater, like an old movie that Elmo directed, free. The theater's contributing the time. And then they're having a birthday party, commemorative birthday party, at Checo Brewing. So they'll have a birthday cake and kind of a celebration there. So it's just a remembrance of Elmo and all of the things he did for the community and the life he shared with us.
As a city manager, what is your involvement with the annual Azalea Parade?
Okay, well, I meet with the Azalea Parade Committee, which is a committee of the Brookings Harbor Chamber of Commerce. They actually organize the parade. And see what city involvement needs to be. So what things we need to do. We, on the day of the parade, we need to do traffic control. We have to shut down the highway and divert traffic to side streets. We have to help line up the parade participants. And we have to have people at each intersection diverting, stopping traffic. We have to set up signs so that people don't park before the parade. We deliver benches and we deliver barricades and trash cans and pick up garbage at the post-parade event at the park. We help vendors, if they're going to have vendors, help them set up at, they're in front of Evergreen Bank or whatever, wherever they're going to be. We help the people who are doing the, have you seen the fish pond at Ray's Market? Yeah, we assist in getting that set up. That's, that part of the parking lot of Ray's is a city parking lot. So we help with that. We have electrical service available there. So it's a lot of coordination with our police and fire and public works departments on helping people find the right place to plug in if they need electrical service or transport a golf cart down so that the parade marshal, who kind of roams up and down the parade, making sure that things go well, can have some transportation. So a lot of sideline kinds of things, kind of things that we do in the background. And of course, our city council is in the parade, so I need to make sure that they have an appropriate vehicle and signs so people know who they are, and make sure that after the parade, things get cleaned up. So I'm usually there, and I'm usually the guy that, it's happened so many times that things just kind of roll along fine. But if there's anything that happens that didn't work right or what have you, we look at it after the event, or if if there's a need for something to be towed or a problem occurring during the parade, I'm there in case something happens. So I can authorize city expenditures to help.
You've shared with us that you attended the inauguration of President Donald Trump in January of last year. Can you tell us more about this experience?
First time I've ever been to an inauguration. It was something I'd always wanted to do. It just kind of worked out that was the right year to go for us. My wife went with us, and so did my youngest daughter, who's in her 40s now, and who had been an intern in Washington, D.C. When she was in college. So she enjoyed the experience going back and, you know, revisiting where she'd been an intern for a summer. So I enjoyed the experience with our daughter. We stayed at a hotel outside of the immediate D.C. area, so we took the public transit subway in to downtown. That's a unique experience, figuring out the schedule and getting in and out of the train and pushing people out of the way and getting pushed out of the way. It was interesting to see the different levels of security. We had to go through multiple checkpoints in order to get into where our ticket allowed us to be. We were able to get tickets from our congressman to be in a standing area that was behind the seating area. So it was just kind of a big mass of people. It was drizzling, so we had to have some rain gear. So we were went through all these little security checkpoints. TSA, who does the airport security, they handled some of the security at the events. They had to be searched, and there were limits on what you could bring. So there was a lot of standing. It was interesting to watch the program, see different people introduced. And what you kind of don't hear on TV is some of the crowd reaction to some of the folks that were introduced. Kind of more negative when some of them were introduced than others. You know, we went to an inauguration ball. My wife and I and daughter went to a dance, a formal ball. That was interesting to see the performers and some of the folks that came. Buzz Aldrin, an astronaut, came to that event. We got to meet him and chat with him a little bit. So, just interacting with folks, many of whom were of the same mind, the same political thought. Everyone around us were, similar political views. So it's kind of interesting. It was like being at a rally in some ways. A lot of young people that had come from groups of students that had come for the event, and they were in the crowd with us.
We understand that you sometimes preside over the Brookings Municipal Court and other municipal courts in our county. Could you tell us what that is like?
Sure. I'm the municipal court judge in Port Orford, and I'm the judge pro tem, which means that I'm kind of the assistant judge in Brookings. So the only time I preside in Brookings is when the judge, Judge Harper, is absent. Judge Harper's been the judge in Brookings for 17 years. In both cases, the court meets once a month, and we handle traffic citations predominantly, and what are called municipal code violations. So if you have a barking dog or a lot of garbage in your yard or other kinds of municipal code violations, nuisances, or what have you, that the judge also hears those cases. So there's no jury. There are no lawyers. The judge does not have to be an attorney in Oregon for a municipal court, and I'm not one. So it's really a situation where you People come and they want to basically tell you what happened, you know, why. And I ask them, what, you know, what happened? What, why were you speeding? What happened here? And we have a little chat about that. And most people plead what's called no contest, which means, yeah, I did it, but either I can't pay the fine, or I need more time to get my license renewed, or, you know, I've been suspended so many times, I can't get a license, and what do I do? So I try to help people work out how to get back on track, how to come up with a plan to pay their fines, how to come up with a plan to get their license back. I do levy fines when people are guilty. I take into consideration their ability to pay. I also consider how frequently they've been in court, what their driving record's been like. So my goal is to help people get on track with driving safely, having their license, having their insurance, having their registration, and the penalty is the lesser part of it, unless they've been there before. And in those cases, there may be a higher penalty. And in most cases, there are. So I hear at Port Orford Court, which I attend every month, I hear about 10 to 15 cases. People come to the court that have one reason or another, they can't comply. They either can't afford to pay the ticket, or for other reasons, they can't afford to get insurance, or they try to tell me it's not their fault, or, you know, or that they didn't see the traffic sign, or, you know, we hear all of the reasons why they didn't obey the regulations, and try to take it from there to be fair in how we deal with it. We get skateboarding cases in the city. At the last session in Brookings, we had several students who were riding their bicycles in the skateboard park, which is a code violation. The skateboard park in Brookings was built as a skateboard park. And we, you know, it's a temptation to use your bike in the skateboard park. I understand that. It's fun to do. And there's no other place like it to ride your bike. But the fact is that the way the skateboard park was designed is that it's fine if you're using a skateboard and you hit the side of the skateboard park. It's designed to take that shock. But it's not designed to take the shock from a bicycle. So it rips up the structure when you use a bicycle there. That's why we don't allow it. So the last time we had several students who were cited for bicycles in the skateboard park, and I think the judge looked at ways to remind them that it was not permitted. I think the amount of fine that he levied was minimal, like $50 or something. And he put him on, I guess, what do you call court probation. He basically holds the citation, doesn't send it in. And if you don't come back with another violation, it gets dismissed.
Tell us about your experiences in Key Club in high school.
Key Club. Key Club was the student version of the Kiwanis organization. Kiwanis organization is a international service club, adult service club, focusing on service to young people. They do fundraising and offer things like helping students buy glasses if they need it, or providing scholarships, or when I was in school, they built playgrounds and, you know, did things like that. So the Key Club was the student version. So when I was in Key Club, we attended some of the Kiwanis Club meetings. We helped at their fundraisers. If they were having a fundraiser dinner, serving a spaghetti dinner to do a fundraiser, Key Club members were the cleanup crew. And we also did some fun things. We would go as a group to the movies or the county fair, or do some service projects at the school. One that we did quite frequently, a service project, is that I lived in Los Angeles, and nearby in Long Beach was a big veterans hospital. So we would go down to the veterans hospital once a month, and there were a lot of veterans there who were bedridden. They couldn't get out of bed. So we would push their beds down the hall, through the halls, to the recreation room so they could watch a movie and just visit with them, and then push them back to their room. So it was that kind of a community service that we enjoyed doing. And you know, we'd go out to pizza later, and, you know, kind of a mixture of service and social activities.
Are you aware of any Kiwanis activities in the Brookings area?
Unfortunately, no. There was a Kiwanis club here when I came to the city about 11 years ago, but I don't believe it exists today.
Mr. Milliman, is there anything else you would like the citizens of Brookings to hear?
I'd like to let the citizens of Brookings know that it's been an enjoyable experience serving as the city manager here in Brookings. It's been a great 11 years doing that. You know, I retired once already in California, so this will be the second retirement for me. But at the city, there's a great group of people that work for the city. They're very dedicated to making Brookings a great place to live and to work. And they'll be continuing with that mission. And I encourage listeners to get involved with their community. Attend city council meetings. They can be kind of dry at times, but that's also where some major decisions are made about the future of your community, and you need to participate. So when you read something about a public hearing or a project that's coming up, or go on the city website and see what's on the agenda, or take a look at our press releases, and there's something that you're concerned about, or maybe not. Maybe you just want to kind of see who the people are that are making policy decisions about your city. Come visit a council meeting and check it out and interact with those city council members, and don't be shy about coming into City Hall and asking to see the city manager or anybody else that if you've got an issue you want to talk to us about, and bring something to our attention. We can't be everywhere and know everything that's a concern to citizens in Brookings. We need to communicate with citizens, but we need citizens to communicate with us so we know where those problems are on the streets and what law enforcement needs there are and what we can be doing better to serve the community. So tell us about it.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you.
You're listening to KCIW LP out of Brookings, Oregon, broadcasting on 100.7 FM.